Warning. My dad and Matt say bad words in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Get on with it.
Yes, get over it! Yeah!
Oh, this is the latest episode of Nighthawks podcast. It's two tired boys and their tired pets. Cat's looking at me like I fucking shit the bed. I'm not even kidding. It's tougher than a fucking nickel steak out, you know?
No kidding. All right. Well, this is another one of our stripped down conversations talking about what we've been watching. I'm Trevor, and that's Matt here in our conceptual Nighthawks Diner. Please find the podcast at the podcatcher of your choosing. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. We are generally everywhere. If you find one that we're not on, let us know and we'll submit. And if you have the ability to rate and review the podcast, please rate it honestly but generously. And as always, recommend the podcast to your friends.
Hold up. No, don't. No, honestly but generously. No, you give it 5 stars.
Okay, Matt won't parse words over this. I get it. Where else can they find us? Nighthawkspodcast.com. We've also got a Twitter presence, an Instagram presence, Facebook at Nighthawkspod for most of those. But yeah, find us.
Almost forgot we take money now.
Oh, that's right. We have a Ko-fi or a coffee. Ko-fi.
A Ko-fi.
Yes, it would be, folks, I'm going to get on my Apple box here. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been bringing you this podcast for what now? 6 years? 7 years? 6 years? Something like that?
Feels like forever, buddy.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a while. And it has always been a labor of love. We do this because we enjoy doing it. We enjoy connecting with people who listen to the show. And it's great for us just to have an artistic outlet and an artistic output for which we can do things and show people, look, this is what I do. But it's always kind of come out of pocket for us. It is not an expensive show to put together, but it is a show that has some overhead. And we have been happy to pay that overhead because it's something we enjoy doing. But boy, howdy, we would just be so happy if the podcast could pay for its own operational costs. And who knows, you know, if we get enough going, maybe we can get some other streaming channels and we can bring you some different content. I don't know, but point is, check out our Ko-fi, Ko-fi, and just whatever change you have laying around. You know, what do you got in the cup holder in your car? That would help us. We're not looking for like major sponsors or anything, although if you are a major sponsor, we'd love to talk to you. But yeah, definitely check out the coffee page, the Ko-fi.
Like, we don't have a lot of leverage here because we're not going to quit, but we just love for one person to throw a little something in the hat.
And then another person.
For the hat, man.
And then another person, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. All right, Matt. Well, we're talking about what we've been watching lately. It's the dawn of a new year. We had some time off, some vacation time, some time to stretch, spend some time with the family, with the animals. And I used that time to watch a couple movies, some of the ones I've been hearing about. But I checked out, Matt, have you seen Jurassic World Dominion?
Yeah, I saw it, you know, on launch day, as it were.
Yeah, so you saw it theatrically.
I'll be honest with you, I think I did, yes.
Well, I think that's pertinent because the fact that you can't remember, I think, says a lot about how I feel about this movie. You coined this turn of phrase for the Nighthawks, but I'm giving Jurassic World Dominion this movie, two enthusiastic thumbs down from me, if I'm going to rip off Ebert and Siskel here. What the hell was this? This is our sixth Jurassic Park movie. And I guess in the grander scheme of franchises that have gone on this long, to make a watchable movie at six is not everybody's strongest suit. But, like, this was rough.
I wanted to show them something that wasn't an illusion.
Thank you.
Something that was real. Something that they could see and touch. Creation is an act of sheer will. Life will find a way.
We can't keep her here forever.
They find her, we're never gonna see her again. We gotta protect her, that's our job.
Humans and dinosaurs can't coexist.
We created an ecological disaster.
Ellie Sattler.
Alan Grant.
You didn't come out all this way just to catch up now, did you?
You coming or what?
We're racing toward the extinction of our species. We not only lack dominion over nature, we're subordinate to it.
I was such a fan of the original, and if you had talked to me for 20 years after that, I would have said, I'm a Jurassic Park fan. But I have to contend with the fact that every movie since Jurassic Park, I just haven't loved. And so I don't know that I'm a Jurassic Park fan as far as a franchise goes. That first movie, A number one, A plus, no problems, no criticisms, but oh boy.
I don't know how the formula alludes here, because the formula for Jurassic Park is show some dinosaurs, take some delight in the dinosaurs, and then have some peril emerge due to hubris. Not rocket surgery. It felt like they tried to, like, melt down a National Treasure movie and a Jurassic Park movie. It's just weird and not good. I'm trying to make sure I'm not getting it confused with the one before it, but, like, it's just so many weird little plot threads and strange ideas that they thought would make cool scenes, and then it's also just kind of a joyless slog.
Yeah, I think on paper they were right. I think they were building a world specifically in this movie that if they had given it kind of time to germinate and mature, would have been a cool sci-fi world that they're building. But they commit this grievous sin of building this world and then doing nothing with it. They use it as a platform to get Chris Pratt from action set piece to action set piece. He absolutely sleepwalks through this. I admit, like, I'm getting a little tired of Chris Pratt, but I know he's more charismatic than the performance in this film. Everybody in this film has a better performance in them. I believe it, because they're gifted actors. We even have Oscar nominee Laura Dern, Oscar nominee Sam Neill. I don't know if either one of them won. I can't remember. Jeff Goldblum is back. Like, this should have been a knockout, but it's just boring. And I like the idea of a black market trade in dinosaurs. I like the idea of dinosaurs out in the world and we have to go and recapture them. But they touched on so many of these and fleshed none of them out. And it was just, this was a hard one for me to watch. One of the major click-driven headlines that you saw kind of in the wake of this movie hitting streaming was that Colin Trevorrow, who is the director of, I think he directed Jurassic World and Jurassic World Dominion. I don't know if he was on board for that middle one. He kind of confessed to one outlet or another that Jurassic Park probably should have stopped after the first movie. And I think that's true. We've had this conversation before. We've covered Jurassic Park on an episode. We covered Jurassic World, the first Jurassic World movie, 1,000 years ago in the early life of the podcast on a bonus episode. We'll link to those in the show notes. To me, Jurassic Park is a horror movie in as much as Jaws is a horror movie. And none of the sequels really tapped into that horror. They had horrific moments or scenes, and there are parts of every Jurassic Park sequel that I have liked, but none of them have made a cohesive, full action horror film for me.
First off, Jaws is uniquely horrible because it's like no matter how many humans you eat, more of them keep swimming in your ocean. And there's definitely sequel legs in the idea of dinosaurs in modern times.
Yeah.
Like you can damn sure milk that cow for something. They, you know, lost the proverbial plot there when they made it more about annoying kids. This one is just so odd. Like, Chris Pratt is a globetrotting loner, you know, say no more.
Yeah.
Who lives in the woods and fights crime.
And he works for the CIA.
It's somehow even each one of these they put out is even worse to Bryce Dallas Howard's lady character.
Right?
This one was approaching, like, she was almost like a Jane Krakowski sketch character from 30 Rock. I was expecting her to be like, dinosaurs, can I fight those with tampons? You know? I don't know why I gave her that accent.
And that's what I'm saying. I've seen Bryce Dallas Howard in shit where she's good. And behind the camera, she's producing some of the best Star Wars content we've seen in years. She's a talented woman. She is wasted here.
And I mean, obviously we're discussing things relative to other things here. And it's like, you can push your glasses up and be like, oh, it's not like it's Manos, the Hands of Fate. But it's like, it kind of is like it's Manos, the Hands of Fate, because Manos, the Hands of Fate didn't have like a $200 million budget. You know? So.
Yeah, this one's a miss for me. And I mean, I don't even recommend that you watch it on streaming. If you're interested, obviously you're going to. It was on Peacock for a while. It's on Amazon Prime now. Honestly, I wanted my 2 hours back. This was a rough one. But speaking of $200 million budgets, Matt, you did the big one. I have not seen this one yet, but you caught the latest incarnation of James Cameron.
Yeah, I went to Avatar, Bigger, Wetter, and Uncut. And was not offended. I received my movie dollar in entertainment. I was trying to explain to somebody that, like, it's not that James Cameron makes the best movies, but he makes really dope-ass movies. He makes the, like, kind of spaceships that you would make if you were 13, but you also could ask a professional engineer how to make it with what you want without it being stupid. Like, and Avatar 2, it is long. The running time actually didn't feel too long sitting there watching it. And it's just neat. It's just nice. It's like going outside. And yes, every criticism of it is true. It is definitely just every other James Cameron movie in a blender with some savior tropes. You know, the guy comes to town and fixes everything. Hero's journey. But it's so earnest and it's so fun to watch. And the pacing and exposition are improved a lot over the first one because they don't have to do work in all the world building, you know, and it's just really, really good. Cool stuff happens.
The humans are returning.
They're hunting us.
What's our plan?
This is our home. This is our family. This is our fortress. This is where we make our stand.
We must protect the people.
Let's get it done. Avatar, The Way of Water. Experience it in 3D.
They deepen kind of the lore about the planet in a neat way. It turns out there's a whole second sentient race on them that is like whales. They live and work in kind with the water navi that they go and I don't know. It's a clunky synopsis, but what happens is there's a little bit of an altered carbon wrinkle to it in that the bad guys have figured out that their personality technology that they use to put people in avatars. The reason it's called Avatar is because they were like a bio drone that looked like a Navi. If you'll send your mind through time and space back 13 years to the original Avatar, right? So what they figured out is that they can do an altered carbon, and that anybody they've done that to before, they can reload into a new avatar that they've grown. And so they take Stephen Lang's character, Colonel Quaritch, and they put him in a young, supple avatar body so he can go fight Jake Sully on equal terms. And they also decant his personal fire team of his handpicked Marines that died with him in the first movie. So basically, like, all the tropey Marines from Aliens that were crammed into Avatar are back.
Somehow Stephen Lang has survived.
And it's kind of funny because, like, you either get that it's a direct indictment of the culture involved or you don't. But they do some stuff that, like, some people didn't like. The bad Navi dressed just like modern Fopperator bros. You know, they have, like, they all but have Punisher shirts on, right? They come as close to just having them in 2022 Republican attire. The wraparound sunglasses, like, all these big blue motherfuckers look like they're about to vlog in their truck. Right? And a lot of people found fault with it because they're like, well, how can they infiltrate that way? Well, they're not built to infiltrate. They're put in Avatar bodies to A, bring them back from the dead with experience about the planet, and B, to blend in with the ecosystem so that they aren't just automatically targeted by all the living things. You know, the people that took it as such that they're like, they're going to try to, like, infiltrate the Na'vi. Well, that's not going to work. Even if they spoke Na'vi perfectly and didn't have tattoos that said death from above on them or whatever, right? Issue would still be like, nobody in the Na'vi culture is going to be like, oh, this random adult that appeared out of nowhere that none of us have met before seems cool. So, like, they were never meant to infiltrate on that level, right? So relax, nerds, is what I'm saying. Just watch it. Watch the pretty thing.
So here's my catch with this, and I have not seen it yet. It is something that both my partner and I want to see, but getting to the movies for a 3.5-hour outing for us is hard. So it may be one that I have no choice but to wait for streaming on this one. But I just, and maybe this is an echo chamber thing, the last 13 years or whatever, I have not heard anybody, not even these people who are online now talking about how I always believed in James Cameron. None of these dudes in my feed were talking about Avatar the last 13 years. Maybe they talked about it when it came out. They're talking about it now. And then we had 13 years of radio silence. And so I have to admit, I talked my fair share of shit about this movie. Like, who remembers Avatar? Who's clamoring for this? Who wants the Avatar sequel this badly that they're spending this much money banking on this gamble that it basically has to break records just to make its money back? Like, this seems foolhardy to me. Now, I'm eating my words. I'm admitting on the show I was wrong. This is working. People are seeing this movie. Obviously, they're seeing it multiple times. I just don't know who these people are.
Avatar does have a bit of an extended franchise that is kind of young adult focused that we're not the demo for. We were already too old when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
For, like, and it does have, like, it had its own Disney park region and it's, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there was quite a bit of an Avatar property for those first 3 years, but it's also, like, other than the lull between Star Wars trilogies, that's an awful long time without a sequel, right?
Right.
So that's probably why the kind of fervor died down. And, like I've made fun of Avatar for its, like, simplicity of plot before. The Ferngully in space jokes are very accurate.
Right.
They're fair criticisms, but Avatar was...
Dances with Na'vi.
It was still very enchanting to watch while you were in it and under its spell. Like, no, I don't know very many people that, like, were really cynical about it the day they saw it, you know?
I enjoyed every minute I spent in the theater watching Avatar, but it did not leave me, I didn't talk about it afterwards. I was like, oh, that was good. What do you got going on now? You want to go get a beer? Like, yeah, okay.
I don't know, though. There were people that were very taken with it. There were Pandora heads that were like, can I move there? Can I live on the planet where everything wants to kill me? Why can't we have that? Why can't we return to Blue Monkey, you know? I had to sit a couple people like that down and just tell them, like, you know, you can do that, right? There are still woods. You can go live in the woods in a shack if you want. It just, in the real world, the woods don't have, like, Dennis, and they don't have, like, pizza. So you might not actually like it for real, for life. But no, this movie, like, a couple things it does in particular very well is it's very well paced for how long it is. It has a lot of child characters in it that are actually, their level of childness is very appropriate and under control and feels realistic. And everything you learned about the forest Na'vi in the first one is just scratching the surface. And these guys have this whole other, you know, way of water. They're very Pacific Islander, Like they do a haka at one point. When they're provoked, they start to actually like literally do human Polynesian things. I'm like, you could have changed it up a little bit, right? Like so it's like it's not without cringe, but it's so earnest. And like the children are handled very well, because like the Sully's four kids have to deal with the shitty local kids when they get where they move. That is handled pretty well, because the local kids haze them pretty hard, but they're also not like, they're not like cartoonishly vile bullies. They're win-overable, and eventually they develop like a grudging respect for each other, and then they actually sort of forget about the beef like actual kids do, you know? Effects are great. Everything's up a notch from before. 10 years of technical progress make everything look slicker. The sort of thin veneer of animation that's over the humans to make them not incompatible with the completely CGI things is very good. I mean, it's thoroughly better than the first one. Some of the imagery in it, and some of like the vehicle designs and, you know, stuff like that is just, I mean, it's just cool stuff. They got little crab mechs. Have you ever looked at a mech and been like, you know what's wrong with this mech? It's not crab shaped.
It's not arachnid.
It hasn't carcinated.
So it was 13 years between Avatar installments. I want to touch on this. I don't want to go into this because, A, it's not done yet as of this record. It will be done by the time you're listening to this. Also, Matt and I are doing a full formal review of this for the One of Us Network. And so we're going to invite you to check that out. But I do want to touch a little bit on a franchise that's going 34 years between entries. And Matt and I have been watching the Willow limited series on Disney Plus.
You think you know what is real and what isn't? What is light? What is dark? Now, forget all you know. Come with me. Willow.
We're looking for the sorcerer, Willow. I was told that once long ago you defeated the forces of evil.
You remind me of your mother.
My dear friend, I thought I could prevent all this. I was wrong.
My brother was abducted. The world needs you again. It needs your magic.
Follow me. We must go beyond the edge of our world. Into the unknown.
Willow!
I need your help.
Just like old times. Ha! Running! Horses! Mayhem! Mayhem! Happy to see you, Andy.
Our true enemy is still out there, rallying the forces of evil. And the only thing standing in his path is us.
I'm going to enjoy this.
If you think you're what I'm thinking, so am I.
I doubt that very much. Take him to my tent and make sure he's tied up.
I don't know. See, that kind of sounds like we're on the same page.
When I was a kid, I used to play at being a sorcerer. Visiting strange worlds, fighting monsters.
Run!
Never thought I'd actually really do it.
And I specifically want to talk to you on this one about the music choices. Without getting into any of the plot or any of the characters or anything that could be considered a spoiler, I will say that you have to brace yourself that there is some use of contemporary music covers in this, and I haven't quite decided myself if I love it or hate it, but I know I feel strongly about it. Matt, where are you on this?
I don't really mind it at all. I was a big fan of A Knight's Tale.
Yeah.
Which had some similar issues. Laugh all you want. That's a good movie.
It grew on me. The first time I saw it, I wasn't in love with it, but I liked it. I have grown to love it over the years. Part of that being just a deepening appreciation of Heath Ledger, but
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I sort of agree with their decision to like scrap the sequel novels.
Those sequel novels were rough.
I'm liking it so far. I'm not actually all that far into it. I still have to binge it before we review it.
Yeah, I will say, I'm enjoying it. Like at the end of the day, I'm looking at this list. It's coming out weekly, but I let episodes pile up and then I binge them in a go, which is not great for my schedule. And it means some late nights for me, especially on stuff that I'm obligated to watch for a review or what have you. I find it kind of a daunting task. I'm like, I've got three episodes to watch tonight. I don't know if I want to do this. The second I turn it on, I'm like, okay, let's queue up the next one. Let's queue up the next one. I'm enjoying it. Time will tell. We're still coming to a climax here. for the purposes of our review here, it's good entry-level fantasy fodder. You can go into this as opposed to, say, House of the Dragon or Rings of Power, two shows that I don't know that we've talked about on the show, but they're dense. They're very dense. They're very lore-based. There's deep conversations about source material and things that are going on online. You're not going to get that with Willow, and if that's what you're looking for, you might be disappointed. They are building some lore here. They are building a world, but it is a very accessible, more simplistic, and it's got some darkness to it, but I want to say even lighter-hearted fare. And that's something that I guess I was needing, because it's hitting really well for me.
Yeah, the attempts to like directly emulate the success of The Witcher and Game of Thrones have led to some overdarking, like the Wheel of Time series attempt.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Pretty gall-derned mediocre. Everyone should have forgotten about it. It deserved to be forgotten. This is a shame because it's a great property, and I feel like it's kind of in limbo because the show they made is not good enough to renew. You could sit down and go like, hey, maybe we should put some actual like more money and time into this. It had very much the issue that like the Dark Tower movie had, where they're like, no, you don't, this is the era of prestige TV, and the one thing you didn't decide to make a long TV show out of was the Wheel of Time. Like, you tried to cover like two books in eight episodes. Are you out of your mind? Also very guilty of wasting a decent cast, which you always kind of hate to see, you know? Now I'm being mean to something that didn't come out recently. Although, along those lines, actually, segue declared. I did watch the Witcher prequel thing, Witcher Blood Origins.
It all began 1,200 years ago, in the Elven Golden Era, before the arrival of humans and monsters in the world.
I've taken control of the entire continent. Faced with chaos, the people will always choose order, no matter the cost.
Seven warriors, outcasts, strangers to each other, bound together to fight an unstoppable empire.
This is the future under the Empire. We need to rise up!
What is that thing?
My beast has done well.
Matt, I gotta confess, the Witcher has kind of missed me. I tried to watch the series, and it was just a little too much. I wasn't following it real well, so I gave up.
The particular problem with the series is that witchers don't age, and elves don't age, and sorceresses don't age in the Witcher universe. And the Witcher universe, the first half of the first season of The Witcher, requires you to understand a bunch of things are happening in two times, and they're cutting back and forth between them, and everybody just looks the same. And they don't explain that very well. It essentially just very much assumes that you have played Witcher 3 and will immediately cotton on to the multiple timelines explored in it.
Which is not a bad thing. Like, if you are trying to make a series for video game fans or for the fans of the books, I imagine they probably caught on to that right away. This is my first foray into Witcher lore, and it just, yeah, I was not following it real well.
The main series actually does like overcome that. And when the sort of timelines catch up to each other, enough background has been given from the back timeline, and you're now familiar with those people as adults or whatever, it gets down to business and gets really good. And it is ultimately a fun show, both seasons, largely based on like, it has people in it that are like fun to watch, that do and say clever things, and has good action. This thing, it's called Witcher Blood Origins, and I'm just going to start calling it Witcher BO. Because in the words of the inestimable Jay Sherman, it stinks.
Now, this is animated, right?
No, this is a live-action one. There is an animated Witcher prequel that I believe is called Brotherhood or Season of the Wolf or something, that is about the older Witcher that teaches Geralt in The Witcher. It's kind of some backstory on him. It's kind of one self-sustained horror caper about a particularly bad creature hunt. It's actually pretty good. It's about on the tier of the Netflix Castlevania series. Like, it's just, it's violent, uses anime conventions, but it's enough of a side thing, and it's self-contained enough and action-focused enough that it doesn't, have you scratching your head like this thing did. Because this, wanted to be very political, but wasn't good enough. The scope wasn't there. The acting wasn't there from a couple of the main people, although it wastes a couple of tremendous people. There's a character called the Lark, who is sort of a revolutionary. Her character is well established, well acted, doesn't do much. The main guy is just a real block of wood.
Is it Chris Pratt?
No, but this dude would pay Chris Pratt for emoting lessons. Chris Pratt can be charming, right? There's very little reason to ever watch it, you know? Witchers are made with a kind of Jekyll and Hyde formula that they drink in their initiation to the Witcher's lifestyle or whatever, and it kills most of them. And this isn't really the story of how Witchers came to be or how the history of any of the many, many orders of Witchers that are introduced, because in the video game, Geralt is from the School of the Wolf, which is one fighting style and kind of lodge they have. And they're implied to be many, and you meet people from the serpent and the cat. So you would think maybe back in the heyday of witching, before all the witchers almost were gone, as is the case in The Witcher, when all these orders of witchers were full and they all had different martial and magical traditions and they all had their own backstories and rivalries, that would be a cool time to talk about witchers. No, this prequel is the story of not the witchers themselves as secret societies or fighting traditions or anything like that. This is the backstory of the invention of the formula. It's the story of the first time they had a monster to kill and needed to give a guy a performance-enhancing drug so he can find it. So they invented a dangerous formula, and he took it, and it hulked him out, and he fought the creature. I mean, it's not uncool, but it's not the hook they needed. In our actual One of Us review of it, somebody pointed out that, the band that they assemble is a literal D&D party. It's a dwarf fighter, an elf mage, a half-elf bard. If that's your, action, and you want the irreverent live D&D party, watch Vox Machina. That's that, but good, you know?
I mean, I'm going to tip my hat to what my review is going to be, but watch Willow. That is somebody took their D&D campaign and put it on screen.
Everyone I have talked to about Witcher Blood Origin really liked the dwarf, who, not unlike Willow, they took the step of, rather than CGI, they casted an actual little person, you know, or cast. Did I say casted? But she's really good, and her backstory is really both sentimental and funny. She has a named hammer she carries into battle. It's all quite silly, and then it turns out the tragic backstory of the hammer is quite tragic. She's also the Princess Leia of Witcher Blood Origin, because everything she points her little bow at dies, sometimes two or three at a time, Legolas style. Everyone else seems to wrestle with one person their own size, so I don't know, maybe they should just hired all dwarves.
So, Matt, ultimately, not a recommend for you on Blood Origin.
Yeah, that's the short version. That's the short version.
You know what is real. And what is not. You know what is light and what is dark. You know what is good and what is evil. Now, forget all you know or think you know. From the creator of Star Wars and the director of Cocoon, Willow. World premiere, May 1988.
Geeks, nerds, devotees of all worlds, lend me your ears. A community of inclusion and passion awaits you at oneofus.net. Movie and music reviews, debates on books and beer, deep dives into comics and games. There's something for everyone because everyone loves something. Podcast posts daily with subscriptions. You get video content as well. All are welcome because in this world of fandom and fanaticism, all of us are in this together. Your love of pop culture and entertainment makes you one of us already. So join us today at oneofus.net.